Is South Africa going to the dogs again? Apparently not. This Work Life Matters season shares informal and candid chats with some of South Africa's youngest startups, businessmen and women. With an understanding of our past and a passion for our future, our guests draw from Zansi as an inspiration to grow personally and as a brand and individuals. Fusing international ideas into a truly South African model, sized to fit our people, economy and future. Today's episode, a personal friend of mine, Vusi Ndlovu, I eat his food always, executive chef who is doing it differently around the world. Looking forward to it. Vusi Ndlovu, Edge Africa self-employed executive chef, and I have followed your food. My best friend is obsessed with your food. So for me, I've eaten all your plates. Congratulations, welcome. How are you doing?
I'm tired, but I can't complain. How are you?
Yeah.
Thanks okay. for having me.
Where are you now? Because I went to your new project. Went to your old projects, your new project. Where is it?
So now we're currently operating Boma on Brie. We just opened 6 weeks ago. So that's why I sound so tired, but it's been a hell of a ride. Like, we opened literally at the beginning of August. And yeah, we didn't expect for it to be such a success from the get-go.
Why would you do something if you don't expect it to be success?
No, you know what it is in Cape Town. So we've always been doing like small concepts, like 30-seaters or whatever. But this is like 120-seater on Brie Street. Like on the corner of Brie Street, it's a different animal altogether. So yeah, it's been wild. It's been wild. Like, we don't even know where the time has gone. But yeah, we're still here.
Tell me about the concept, because for me, I know some of the owners. The food is amazing. Just give us a bit of what kind of stuff you do. What is your ethos about business? So let's start with your cooking before we get to business.
So the food at Boma especially is more, so the idea was to have an adult relaxed spot, you know, where adults can hang out. Because I heard you speaking about Gen Z's. Hey, I don't think they like that word. But so it's a place where you can, let's say you have to come to my house. And I had all the grocery in the world. And as a chef, what would I cook over the fire for you? So it's like, it's very relaxed dining. So there's like jaffles, there's scab ribs, you know, there's leeks that are cooked in the ashes. So it's just very relaxed, real food. Like, there's no fuss. It just has to look nice, taste nice, and make you feel good. That's what we do.
How did you start? Let's talk about this. It says youngest head chef. Who is doing different work by working with NGOs when sourcing food and pushing boundaries with creativity and work model. If you don't understand that, Google Translate is
perfect. It says youngest head chef. I think I was the youngest head chef at the Mount Nelson, or the first head chef of color at the Mount Nelson. I think, yes, I was actually. But I started when I was 18, you know, but no, go be an engineer, no firstborn of man with that surname, Ndlovu.
Ndlovu Elephant.
Yeah, so basically like Shaka Zulu's cousin. I can't say that, can I? But it's fine. No, so mom was like, go be an engineer. You need to go look after us after we get old. Then I went to engineering school to open their tax. Hey, they look depressed, eh? Like the third years, I'm like, hey, guys, but you're going to be rich, eh? But they're like, hey, don't do it. So I was just sort of scared by that because when I was in matric, my parents were very strict. Like, we had to be home by 6. I don't think I had a girlfriend in matric, you know, because I couldn't even go out. So as soon as I saw a gap and I saw freedom, I was like, I'm going to go work with the bandits there in the kitchen and go be a chef.
What did your parents say about that?
They were like, well, don't talk to us.
How long?
Forever. No, not forever. My dad was not keen about it, but my mom would send me like 3,000 on the side, you know, because I was earning 1,000 rand a month. And I told my mom, like, I don't need you anymore.
So you didn't study?
No.
Oh, what?
Yeah. School of Hard Knocks.
And then how long were you there? Tell us about the journey.
Timeline. So 1 year at the Sheraton, because now I was dealing with my eyes, you know, because I was on the egg station. Makanda, 1 year.
Eggs?
Yeah.
For a year?
Yeah. Or for 3 months, because I was very, like, determined to push, right?
So the only person who works with more eggs is a gynecologist.
Oh, wow.
Keep up.
It's too early.
Nice. Keep up
one.
With me.
It's 10 o'clock.
Keep up with me. That was shot.
Now I need to have another one to rebuttal that one.
It's too late.
Yeah, it's done. So I did X for 3 months. But then there were these young chaps, man, that were doing cooking competitions. So now they were making pap into rectangles and diamonds and squares. And I was like, what are you doing? My mom would have a fit, like, ipapa in a square. Why? You know what I mean? But I was curious about that, you know. So I'd always watch and copy and, like, yeah, then I was stalking chefs, you know. Then fast forward, I stalked Peter Tempelhof. Then I went to the Greenhouse. I knew nothing.
But how did you get to all these big, well-known restaurants so quickly?
So I've got a thing on my email, a greetings from South Africa, that I used to email every chef that I liked. And I would just like serial like stalk them. I'm like, I'm available, I've got hands, I can travel. And then, yeah, then I just put myself in the right circles. Like, I would just literally stand with the SU chefs or wherever, and then you just get to know them. What? And you just literally be a cockroach. You just sit there. You don't go anywhere. It works.
And you've been recognized by the chef world. How was that? Tell us about your accolades. Don't be modest, man. Now open. That'll be my open number.
No, so when I won the San Pellegrino Best Young Chef in Africa in 2018.
Where was that?
That was in 2018. When did I win it?
Where was it? I mean, the competition.
It was in Milan.
Was it in Milan? Like Italy? Dubai? Okay, yeah. Sharp.
No, after Milan, you know, everything changed, really, because...
So you worked in Milan?
No, I did a competition in Milan.
Okay.
So now I'm chilling. I'm back in Joburg, you know, trying to live my rock star life. And then I'm starting to get these emails and these opportunities, you know, that I gave, which is when I do a residency in at Prada.
Prada, like the
label.
Like
the expensive one.
The one that you just look...
The one that you ask the price and you ask what time do you close the shop,
yeah,
then you don't go back.
Okay, Prada. Okay, Prada.
Yeah, yeah.
And then?
I did Prada, then all of a sudden now I'm going to Finland. I've never heard of Finland. I've heard of it, but I've
never... Have they seen black people in Finland?
I was the first black person in a sauna there in 120 years.
What?
So that's an accolade for me.
So they thought they were boiling you?
They were fascinated. They wanted to see what would happen.
Oh, if you could swim or you would sink?
I stayed afloat, chief.
And then...
Then from there, it just really went off, like, because I was running a restaurant called the Marabi Club, which also opened with Luke De Roberts as a pop-up. But then, yeah, that was great. Because, no, then from there, I just got tired of working for someone because it was rules and regulations, you know. Not to say I wanted to misbehave, but I just thought I had ideas and I wanted to travel. You know, if BMW is saying, can give you a car for a week, but that time I don't have a license, I'm like, ish. You see now, if I had worked for myself, I would have, you know. So there's many ideas that I wanted to do, but because I didn't have that admin background. Mm-hmm. Because when pear ganje, cut an onion, quick an onion, serve an onion, I can do that. But now and then I met Epsi and Co, and that's when literally like...
I got to tell us, Epsi, give us more.
Oh, Epsi Pancha.
Okay.
AKA, she's one of the co-owners of Edge Group Holdings. So she's basically the ones who have a saying at the house, like, don't bring babies home, which basically means she goes out and she meets famous people. And then she's like, Vusi, we're opening a restaurant tomorrow. I'm like, yeah, because we have so much free time. So she's basically the driving force behind the business.
Okay.
And she's like literally like the biggest dreamer ever. Like, I'm going to skip a few stories, but when we drove to Franschhoek, I think we had no plan. She didn't even book the Airbnb. But we're driving to Franschhoek to open a restaurant in 4 days. I was like, with what money, Epsi? She's like, money always finds me. So I was like, okay, cool, whatever. Needless to say, Franschhoek was a ride. So, yeah, I think we've just put ourselves in that position where we don't really have to ask for permission for things anymore. Because, you know, everyone feels like, oh, no, I need to do this. No. We do what we want and we do it the way we want to do it. You know, so, yeah.
So what keeps you going? Because I can see, even though you're achieving big things, yeah. I've actually been at when you were winning an award many years ago. I don't even know if you remember this.
Yeah.
I was there.
I was not.
We were on our feet.
We were.
I didn't even know you then.
Yeah.
But we saw a brother go up.
We were
on our feet. We were screaming and shouting. We didn't know what we were screaming for.
But we were doing the thing.
But we were supporting. So that's why, for me, wherever you are, we'll follow you. We'll eat your food. What's still to come? What are your ambitions?
Because I know you won't rest. What still keeps me going? You know, I don't regard my awards. I give it in my apartment. We don't hang up our awards because...
Awards. That. It's an S. That S is very important.
We don't hang the awards or the plaques on the wall because, for me, that gives you a false sense of security. It's not like I'm a neurosurgeon and I've got my certificate on the wall. That's different. But an award is just to say, okay, for that period in time, you were, like, good. But now, if I believe that, and I don't want to get stuck in that frame of mind where, like, 2018, I was the one.
Yeah.
No, I must forget that and move on. So what's still to come? Oh, we're opening another restaurant.
So you have another restaurant you're opening?
Yes. We're opening the Time Out Market at the waterfront. It's going to be like a high-end street food, African street food restaurant. So, like, think like Nyama Choma.
Oh, when's that?
We can't say, but it's in November.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, wow. Narrowed it down.
So, yeah, so that's also good, like, big hitters, you know, Bertus Basson is there, all the other big chefs are there, Peter Timberloff is there. So it's quite cool now, from becoming the student, I get to open a thing next to the ball.
Like Daniel-san beating up Miyagi.
Nothing like that. But so it's quite fascinating for us because now we're going to do that. And then next year, March or May, we're going to open Edge, the fine dining element of our business, permanently next year. So that's going to happen also. So yeah, who needs free time?
What's your biggest influences when it comes to food? How did you end up getting your taste and your kind of vision and goals?
So I was in Belgium doing a stage at like a fancy Michelin star restaurant.
How long? Are you not that old, man? How old are you?
How old do I look, bro? It's this baby face killer thing that I have.
Nah, man.
32.
But you keep on mentioning countries and yeah. How have you been able to do everything you've done in this? It's only been 12 years.
It's been more than that. 14 years, no?
14 years.
Yeah, 14 years. No, man, like, you know what? I'm very curious by nature. Mm. So if I want something, I'll get it.
Yeah.
No, so after that, I was like, I had a bit of money, like 24,000. So I have no concept of money in terms of, I don't want to wear Prada. I don't want to wear Gucci.
Oh, amen.
My thing is, I must pay rent. Mm-hmm. I must buy my cigarettes. And I must be able to go out. Mm-hmm. That's my, and buy nice things for the wife.
Okay. Now and then. I was about to go, I would think you got the order the wrong way around, but okay.
No, particular order.
Okay. Yeah.
So now the idea, so I was like, no, man. So I was on Instagram. I was like, this restaurant looks cool. So then I went to In the Wolf and it was great. And I was supposed to be there for 2 weeks, but it ended up being a year and a half, you know, on a stage, which is you work for free to learn, right?
For a year and a half?
Mm.
Sounds like slavery.
No. It's called an internship.
It sounds like slavery.
Internship, bro.
Okay, cool. Sharp. Another word. That, you know, internship is a private school word for slavery, but carry on.
I'll say what I said.
Okay, so, internship.
Yeah, so now when I was at Indowolf, you know, this guy, Kobe, was like a rock star, bro. He was literally like this guy with long hair. Mm. He didn't care. He was just like, he would take a pumpkin and smell it, then he would just be like, let me throw it over the fire and see what happens. Then we take the, like, it was just doing odd things, you know, and people were paying like lots of money for this. I was like, we can also,
this guy must be closer.
You know, I'm just like, chief, what do you call that one? No. So, but he was so like organic about it, you know, and was never like written down. And that's what I like to do now also. It's like, especially with the fire, like we don't write down recipes. We fight with apps all the time. I'm like, I'll make something good. Then I'll try to make it again. She'll be like, you didn't write it down. Now you don't remember. So it's cooking with intuition, really, and just trying to feel the ingredient and not to try. Because when you're young, I want to show, sir, this is how clever I am. I can do 17 things with the leek. No one cares. Does it taste nice? So I think that's what it is now, like just cooking and having fun with it, you know. Like at Edge, we'll explore the African continent. Like we're in Senegal and we're like, hey, these people eat a lot of rice. But then we're the best food in Senegal, you know. The only time we didn't have a good meal was at a fancy hotel in Senegal. But the street food was great. So, yeah, so I think just that thing of just embracing Africa. Oh, back to the Belgium story. So every Saturday, every nationality had to cook a dish from their country for staff meal, right? So now the Americans did the barbecue, the Mexican lady did the watermelon chili thing. Amazing. Hey, now it's my turn. I'm like, yo, South Africa, what am I going to make? For a whole week, I had to think about this staff meal, and I ended up making a chicken curry. And I was like so disappointed. I was like, come on, man.
They like it, though.
They like spice. They don't know spice, so obvious.
Okay.
But it wasn't me representing. I didn't feel like I felt like I was trying to be someone I'm not.
Okay.
So that's when we went into the whole African narrative. Like from that day on, I just started researching, tasting, asking around. So that's what we focus on now.
So for me, why do you think you're successful? Because I think your cooking is beyond your skin color.
Yeah, it doesn't matter
that you're youngest. That does nothing for you now. What do you think it is about you, if there's a young person listening now, they can go, there's that about him that makes him here?
I think it's to stay curious, you know? Mm. Like, there's never a day, if I see something interesting in the African market, I ask the African auntie there, I'm like, what is this for? She says it's for stew. Like, everything in the African market is for stew. And but that's to that curiosity every day to be like, okay, what can we do with this thing? How can we go beyond that? And then, like, the natural need just to be creative, you know? Because even though I try to make a simple lunch menu at work, but I can't. Not that I can't, but if they say, Vusi, make a vegetarian salad, I want to put duck fat on it. And they're like, no, I'm like, okay, sorry. So I think just that curiosity and just trying to push the boundary as much as we can. Because I think if you're not curious anymore and you think you know and you think you've achieved, then there's no point. Because...
Okay. We know your accolades. We know everything you've done. For me, I think you're similar to me. It's not nice to succeed alone.
Yes.
We want to bring others up.
100%.
We want to succeed and then throw the ladder down and let people come up. How can you, what can you tell people who are listening who want to do things like you, township kids, township boys, people, township girls who want to be great and want to be chefs, but their parents go, no. Like, what kind of advice can you give them?
Honestly, I'll be like, go to school. I'm joking. No, but I think the idea is to be intentional about it. You know, I know that word has been thrown around a lot lately, like be intentional, lean in. But I think when you start cooking and you want to cook, just be intentional about and realistic that you won't get the money today. You won't get the quote unquote fame or sit with Simgis and do a podcast next week. It might take a few years, you know. But I think to be intentional and to be like realistic about what the industry requires because it's not easy work. And yeah, like be honest with yourself. If you feel like, because there's many avenues to cooking, right? You can work on ships, you can be a food scientist, you can be a food stylist. You don't have to be sweating at the back of the kitchen. So I think be intentional and do your research because, yeah, it's not all as it seems.
Yeah. Okay, listen, yeah. Why do you think people like your food? Because I think it's important, if you're doing well, it's important that that you're able to know exactly about, I'm doing this, and this is why. And then, because sometimes people want to reinvent what's working. Like
why? Look, I think now at Bulma, like we've got this jaffel on the menu. The first time I had a jaffel. It's like a bright brick. It's like a sandwich.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, but now this jaffel, I've never had one. I don't know why we put it on the menu. I also don't know.
Okay.
But I like the look of it. It was cooked in the fire, so I was like, let's do it. And then, but it was such an authentic thing. We didn't do anything special. We just made the best things possible. And I think people like the food because it's real and it's authentic. Like, and it's got a story. Like, everything's got a story to it. It's not just like, okay, 1 + 1 = 2. Because that works, no. So there's a story that you're trying to tell with each plate. And I think people are interested in that. And that's why people have been trying to follow us and try to learn more about the stories and the people behind the stories. So yeah, that's what we push, you know. We just push the story. Because I feel like if you don't have a story, you're just eating. You're not intentional about it. So yeah, the jaffel's got a story. Everything's got a story.
Tell me about your sourcing of food, because a lot of every chef I talks to talks about fresh produce.
Yeah,
fresh. You have something different that you do about your sourcing of your produce. And
so it depends on the concept. So like for Edge, we were sourcing from African markets and like small scale farmers, not farmers but wholesalers. And we'll literally go to Salt River, knock on doors, be like, listen, we'll give you a credit app. And they don't know what that is. But we know, we try to push that narrative that you too can also supply a big hotel or a big restaurant. And then when we do like bigger concepts, like when we do the Time Out Market, so we're going to source from the WWF. They've got these ugly vegetables that don't make it to the shelf. Like if your tomato's got a little bit of a, you know, they throw it away.
Yeah.
So I'm like, guys. That's still a tomato, it's still delicious. So we're trying to source our stuff through that avenue. And so, yeah, it's a bit of a topsy-turvy road, but yeah, it works nicely for us. And, I mean, it saves money, but but it also helps a bigger community and it fixes a problem in the value chain of supply. So, yeah, but I also like with meat and stuff like that, you know, Apps has got very great connections with meat farmers. So we literally will find the best cow that money can buy or that we can afford at least. And then we will use it appropriately. So even now for our Spit Braai Sundays that are coming up.
Sundays?
Yeah. So at Boma, we'll be doing a Heritage Day Spit Braai. But even
Sunday?
That,
to Sunday?
Yeah. So that lamb is from this old man called Eddie. He speaks little to no English, but he's found the best formula to feed his lamb. And these things are huge and delicious. Like when you eat it, you kush, like this one.
So what time is it opening Sunday?
1 o'clock.
Okay, we'll be there. I'll put it down.
She's got the booking details.
Listen, yeah, it's been a pleasure. We love your food. I think I don't think you give yourself enough credit. I think apart from us loving your food, we dig you as a person. So thank it's you. Always a pleasure thank to spend you. Money on you. We never ask for freebies. Tell the people.
No. You've never
asked. We've never asked for freebies.
And I've never sent you one either.
Yeah.
Maybe after this one.
And we don't even want a freebie. So it's a pleasure, my friend. I love seeing you breaking the mold and showing people how it's done. And
awesome.
Showing the young people that you got to work and no excuses, man. What a pleasure.
That's it.
We'll see you, my friend. Thanks for joining us.